This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 20th of August 2012 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to the 45th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week's show is dedicated to music. The biz, the festivals, the lowdown on the tours, the riders, and we'll even play some of the stuff too. Courtesy of a very fine Midori House session recorded just for you, our listening several. So lend me your ears, cats, and we'll have a look, shall we? First of all, a visit to the not-so-icy wastes of the Scandinavian summer to explore two mighty fine Nordic festivals, Flo in Helsinki and Oya near Trondheim. Here's a bit of those.
Norway's music scene is a really hard scene to represent. There's a lot of sub-genres and a lot of smaller genres. It's very important for Oya to represent all of these genres at the festival.
And the Fife folk mastermind James Yorkston dropped by our studios last week to perform a Midori House session of beautiful songs from his new album, I Was a Cat from a Book.
What I love doing at the moment is just filling in the words, filling in the rhymes with so many words and having different scans and things going on and playing with sort of double meanings and things, and I love doing that.
And Atlanta rockers Black Lips will show us how and why they decided to tour in the Middle East, by which they mean Egypt, Tunisia and Syria.
We don't like to involve politics with our music. That's a very thin wire to walk. We're just going there because we love playing music for new people, and we think maybe a lot of rock and roll bands don't get out to these locations, so it might be nice for them to like just see something they don't normally see.
Plus, we'll hear how the Avant indie darlings Domino Records are keeping up with the Digital Joneses with a new service. That's all here, all of that, on Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. First up, a song from James Yorkston, who performed an exceptionally beautiful Midori House session for us here last week. This from the new album named, and we'll learn why later, I Was a Cat from a Book, Border Song.
Something o'clock, the bird clock called, and I shivered and I shuddered, half awake, and my back was turned, but half asleep, I envisioned a rook, angry and ash shoot from coming down the chimney, anxious to peck at the eyes and to poke at the feet of the slumbering Scotsman and his confused partner. But our last snow and our last day was a gem, a frozen walk, a slip and a slide, and no rush to escape. Our morning spent, no mention of north of the border, and our last day was a gem, a frozen walk, a slip and a slide, and no rush to escape. Our morning spent, no mention of north of the border. Drunk, I had hidden your clothes, and you awoke first and fast and struggled to find them in this frozen room, hiding under the covers from this almost complete stranger. And when I awoke, I did not know where I was. A grey lit room, I could see my breath and your long dark head and your long thin back. And it took me all of 3 seconds to remember where we were and who you were and why I was here. To remember where we were and who you were and why I was here, to remember where we were and who you were, and why I was here, to remember where we were and who you were, and why I was here. What advice can I give to someone so young? Do not lead your life like mine. Do not lend your life to somebody like me. But you failed in the gaps and my shy started blues. They became more amusing in their absurdities, and less sense than making the more fun we're having. Do not care, for I do not care. We cannot afford to care, as this is nothing, just a flirt, just a flicker, just a taster of what is not to come. This is nothing, just a flirt, just a flicker, just a taster of what is not to come. This is nothing, just a flood, just a flicker, just a taster of what is not to come. This is nothing, just a flood, just a flicker, just a taster of what is not to come. This is nothing, just a flood, just a flicker, just a taster of what is not to come. This is nothing, just a flood, just a flicker, just a taster of what is not to come.
And that was Border Song by James Yorkston. Now for another kind of live. During the 8 years of its history, Helsinki's Flow Music Festival has proven to be an event to keep an eye on. It's grown steadily and at the same time gained ever more international attention. Starting as a sideshow for the annual Helsinki Festival, it's now in its own league compared to other Finnish shows. Able to attract artists who've not performed in Finland before and an international audience who fly in for the hijinks. In the middle of August, Helsinki saw the biggest Flow Festival so far. Native Helsinki man and monocle chap Marcus Hippie went to listen to Björk, Feist, The Black Keys, Sten Etienne and Friends. Lucky lad.
This is a festival that you wait for the whole summer in the end. It's the best event in Helsinki.
People who care about music in Finland always eagerly await Flow Festival. It's established itself from other festivals, as the Finnish Broadcasting Company's reporter Satu Nurmia points out.
We have the same artists in many other festivals, but here you get something that wouldn't come to other festivals. Perhaps because it has a reputation, or perhaps because the organizers actually know what they're doing.
Main stage performers, Finnish indie pop band French Films, also think Flow Festival is a welcome addition to Finland and reflects the rising interest in the Finnish music scene.
They don't have this kind of muddy festival feeling, you know what I mean? And food, it's completely different than other festivals. There is a lot of like different kind of bands that other festivals usually have, but Flow doesn't have that kind of boring thing, you know.
I quite like when you describe the big Finnish bands being boring. How would you define yourself, French Films, or what kind of an alternative are you?
No comment, man.
Does someone else want to say something?
I don't really think there has been a band like us before us in Finland. Finland is at least used to be a big like heavy metal country. Still is though. But nowadays the Finnish music scene is in only a couple of years become like so much more interesting than like a couple of years back.
This year, Flow Festival attracted an interesting mix of international and domestic artists. The biggest names were Björk, The Black Keys and Feist, alongside names such as Saint Etienne, Nicholas Jar, Kindness and Lindström. Finnish artists were obviously well represented, as were Swedish acts. The Helsinki audience got very excited about Mike Snow, Lykke Li and a new name to emerge from Stockholm, Coral Raven, who had a theory as to why Swedish bands are getting so much attention.
I guess there were a couple of bands coming out of Sweden around 2004-5 maybe, and then there's been this kind of snowball effect, and I don't think we particularly share very much with them, but we're Swedish.
Flow Festival began 8 years ago and it's been growing steadily ever since. The artistic director Tuomas Kallio and Suvi Kallio, managing director of the festival, say that the ethos has remained the same.
I think that at that time we never thought that we would grow it as much as we have. The growth has been sort of organic, I would say. I still think our kind of core idea is to create a festival that we wish to attend ourselves.
We want to create a village inside Helsinki, a village of different kind of atmospheres and variety of program and good services. So there's lots of stuff beside music, and we ourselves think that is actually even more important than the music. At least that is something that differs us from the other festivals. If we leave out the music, there has to be something else left, and that's very important for us, that there has to be something more than just music.
Bands and beer. we think.
American indie pop band Friends agreed on the flow principles.
Festivals are always great because you get to hang out for a few days and camp and see a bunch of bands, but when more festivals start to incorporate like installation art, visual art, just like more conceptual things, I think it's great because people come to a festival to get into a different world and into a different mindset. So if the people running it can kind of set up things that will be inspiring and eye-opening, I think it's very effective. When you see me walking around with him, I'm not just another chick.
Friends had not been in Finland before, and interestingly enough, it was only the second time for a band who have been going strong for 20 years, Saint Etienne.
Last year, was it this year? We played in this year in Indonesia for the first time, and last year in Singapore for the first time. And you know, you think, is anyone going to know who we are? And then you get there and they do, and it's great. So it's nice that we've been going for over 20 years, and there's still lots of places we haven't been, and it's a chance for us to go somewhere.
I think that's the thing, we're quite greedy about sort of traveling to new places and stuff, you know.
Food.
We like to sample food and local drinks.
Well, in Finland, we haven't played in Finland until last year. It was the first time we'd ever played in Finland. It seems crazy.
The Finnish media named the last day of the festival a Super Sunday. Two superstars were performing at the same time, Björk at Flow Festival and Madonna elsewhere at the Helsinki Olympic Stadium. The fast regeneration of Helsinki means that there will soon be residential buildings right on the doorstep of the festival site, but the organizers are hoping that next year the event will be able to return to its convenient central location. For Monocle in Helsinki, I'm Markus Hippi.
So we've heard that the Nordic festival season is in full swing, and just across the border in Norway was the Oya Festival, boasting Björk too, Busy Lady, as well as Florence and the Machine, the Stone Roses and First Aid Kit. The music's the main thing, sure, but Nordic festivals have also always aimed for an unimpeachable record on the crap they leave behind after the fans and bands have left their last beer can. Between stages, Thea Erdal caught up with environment manager Julie Forshammer and, to keep it real, band bookers Mattis Fitt and Birgit Mandelind.
The Oya Festival is truly unique in its kind. From a small gathering in the late 90s at Kalvøya, a beautiful little island in the Oslofjord archipelago, the Oya Festival has now grown up and has for many become a key highlight in the yearly festival calendar, with more than 85,000 visitors every year. Birgitte Mandelid is from the festival's booking group.
When the festival started, it was mainly focused on rock and also mostly on Norwegian bands, local bands from Oslo. And as we moved to the city, as we expanded, first it was 2 days, then 3 days, now it's 4 days, and we have more bands, we have more people, and the booking profile tries to reflect that, to give people something in every genre, with the common denominator is just that we like it, that it's good. Oya Festival is part of a program for landmark festivals, which means that we receive state funding. But this comes on top of the regular festival budget. It's not supposed to go into the booking or any of the regular things we pay money for, which is a lot, making a festival. But we use it to spread our knowledge, the things that we learn doing an event this size, and also for an international program where we try to help Norwegian bands make it abroad. We take bands to London, to Berlin, to New York, to Texas every year.
The lineup has a plethora of great international headliners, such as Björk and Bon Iver. But the Norwegian scene is also represented, with a number of amazing and diverse bands that will likely be popping up on your radar soon, if they haven't already.
Mm-hmm.
highly danceable Philco Fiction, melodic Young Dreams, and bubbly High as a Kite, to name a few. Mattis Witt is also part of the booking team, as well as playing in the Norwegian band Heyerdahl.
Since I grew up in Oslo, Øya Festival has been a hugely influential festival in my musical upbringing. I remember going there from a very early stage, sneaking from home, even from when I was like 14, checking out newer bands. It is really has a unique position in Norway as the main window towards the world for looking at cutting edge, popular indie rock and roll music, as well as electronic music, and as well as showcasing Norwegian act together with their international peers. I feel like sometimes like pushing the Norwegian bands to really reach for something bigger than you usually get in Oslo, which is a really small city, musical-wise, yeah.
Witt explains how the festival is staying true to their Norwegian humble heritage, abhorring a commercial approach to music, and embracing an eclectic mix of acts.
I think Øya never has sold out in any way. All the acts are booked from curatational perspective rather than a commercial perspective. Øya has a really unique position in that it sells out every year and people really trust the festival's judgment. So that also enables the booking group to really have an open approach and go into every year with not having to really book the acts for selling tickets, but really book the acts that generally excites them. And I feel they've been good at this for years, and this is still a heritage that is kept today. Norway's music scene is a really hard scene to represent. There's a lot of sub-genres and a lot of smaller genres. It's very important for Øya to represent all of these genres at the festival, because if you leave out the jazz, or say you leave out the black metal, or you leave out the experimental underground gangster rap, you know, people will be quite taken aback if they don't get booked. So I feel Øya has been really good in integrating all these different genres into their musical program. I feel there's always members in the booking room that have a good taste in each genre, and that we can really provide a snapshot of what's interesting and going on in the Norwegian musical flora.
The Øya Festival is smacked right in the city center in the Old Town, in a picturesque setting by the Oslofjord, on medieval grounds. But what are the difficulties facing such an urban festival? With a new railroad project now in the works, the Øya Festival will have to find a new place to rock on in 2 years' time, as Birgitte Mandelid explains.
Having to move a festival this size will of course impact it, I think. It won't be the same. The question is, will it be bigger, will it be smaller? Will the whole atmosphere, the whole vibe change? I don't know. We're trying to look at different locations, and we also have a good relationship with local politicians who are helping us find that special place we can stay. It's kind of difficult, but we're trying as best we can.
The Øya Festival's green heart is another factor that keeps enticing people to trek up north, as environmental manager Julia Forkammer explains.
The festival started its environmental process like 12 years ago, in realizing that we are an urban festival and we have an urban audience and they're interested in other things as well as music. So what could we do? And one of our biggest things were starting to sell organic food, which was a big thing in Norway, because our supply of organic food is not that big and it's really, really expensive. So this year we are celebrating 10 years with organic food, and we are selling almost up to 100% of organic food to our audience and to our artists and to our 2,000 volunteers. 3 years ago, the Øya Festival were looking for a main sponsor for the first time, and we started then working with Hafslund, which is one of Norway's biggest electricity companies. And they provided us with our biggest environmental accomplishment so far, because they put down permanent electricity in the park, so the festival is not fueled by very polluting diesel generators, as so many other festivals are. We are now run on permanent electricity, and which comes from hydropower, which is also quite green. So we worked with Hafslund for 3 years, and now they are all taking all our human waste from the festival, from all our toilets, and that's being used for district heating in Oslo. So if you go to the toilet at the Oya Festival, you can actually go home to your apartment afterwards and feel it's been heated by what you left at the festival. So that's a great circle of life we're working more on.
The Oya Festival has always been testing new ground in terms of collaborations. And one of the big challenges this year has been transportation.
This winter, we started thinking about what more can we do regarding transportation, because a lot of artists are flying into our festivals, but it is an international festival, so we cannot only have, you know, local produce when it comes to artists. So what could we do? And we started looking on cars and vehicles and transportation. So we took in not only one automobile company, but four or five different companies who have supplied us with electricity cars and hydrogen cars.
The festival is celebrating 10 years of serving organic food, and Julia is immensely proud of their organic profile.
Oya Festival wants to put focus on Norwegian artists and Oslo artists, but also on local restaurants. But first I'd like to say that we try to measure how much more does it cost us to serve only organic food. And our buyer said, well, approximately 15% higher cost on organic food. And we choose to pay that more money. And it's like our booking department, they don't buy a band that costs 15% less because they cost 15% less. You know, you buy the bands and you get the bands that our audience like and which are building the festival for what it is. So the organic food is a little bit more expensive, but it's something we choose to do. So some restaurants have been with us for many, many years.
And her favorite?
We have a local restaurant called the Crossroad Club, which is quite new. And they came last year to the festival for the first time, so they've only been like 2 years. And they have, this year they had a gumbo, like a New Orleans gumbo, with a lot of seafood in it. And it was just great and spicy and all organic and fresh herbs and all. And I really loved that, actually. So I'd love to go back to the festival and not working and just have a cold beer in the sun and eat that gumbo from Crossroad.
For every native Oslo dweller, the Oya Festival is something you talk about with pride. Maybe you fell in love watching Best Coast, dance to Juan Atkins at the club, or merely share the sunset over the Oslofjord with friends. These are so-called Oya moments here in Oslo, the ones you gather once a year under a surreal Nordic sky by the sea. Mattis remembers the Knife concert in 2006 particularly well.
There's one scene that I'm especially fond of that provides a really scenic view of Oslo, where Knife appeared with obviously an amazing, amazing visual show. They had just released my favorite album of all time called Silent Shout. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful surrounding, a bit of a contrast from the beautiful sunset to like nice, really dark and Swedish melodic techno music. And it was just a truly special moment for everyone involved in.
The Oya Festival has that certain charisma that makes you want to head north in August every year. I'm personally already looking forward to it. For Monocle, in Oslo, I'm Thea Erdal.
And you're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. We're back with Domino Records' Dash for Digital after this.
The perfect accompaniment to summer is a well-mixed cocktail, so as the season hits its stride, we handpicked a trio of bartenders from around the world to prepare for us their cocktail du jour. From Tokyo to São Paulo via Beirut, we filmed the maestros at work, headlining the Yoshida Martini, the Lychee Caipirinha, and the Aromatic Smash. Pull up a bar stool for a front row seat. Monocle Films on monocle.com.
Inspirational mayors, money-making gentrifiers, park creators, subway planners, tech hub upstarts, wayfinding geniuses, broom-toting road sweepers, stadium designers, all-seeing historians, and squawking birds. If they help make a city, you'll meet them on The Urbanist, Monocle's weekly show about the cities we live in that's presented by me, Andrew Tuck.
That's The Urbanist, premiering every Thursday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
You're tuned into Culture on Monocle 24. I'm Robert Bound, and you're listening to a music special here. Your ears will have been graced by the songs of Fife's finest, James Yorkston. You've heard what makes Nordic festivals so damn good. Now for some of the business stuff. Domino Records, the British label home to many brilliances such as the Arctic Monkeys, Hot Chip, John Cale and Dirty Projectors, are starting a new online audio service that they've called, perhaps bravely, Domino Drip. Interestingly, for an internet music model, it relies on music fans' brand loyalty to a label rather than the band to be a success. I spoke to Kurt Lane, head of digital strategy at Domino, to hear how he sees it all dripping down.
It's really a label-based subscription service. Uh-huh. So for the very reasonable price of $9.99 a month, you can subscribe to it, and then each month we will send you basically digital files of the newest releases. So, you know, you get an email that says the new Hot Chip album is out, and then you can just go and download it, and it's, you know, high-quality files, MP3s or WAV files. And the idea of the Domino Drip is that we're drip-feeding you. It was just really an experiment. We didn't know if there would be a fan base out there that would be interested in really subscribing to the label and to the artists on the label at that level. I mean, obviously, there's so many services out there now, like Spotify and all these subscription services that give you, you know, access to all of the world's music, essentially, mm-hmm. in a very sort of non-curated, flat way. And so our idea was that, you know, for that same amount of money, people probably want a very curated experience. And there's definitely a fan club feel to it. So we view it as really a modern fan club and a modern record club in a way.
And it's making a cool indie label kind of accessible as well. So you're sort of, people are sort of showing the inner workings. It's a bit more like being a member of the press. You're very lucky. You get the first pressings of the CDs. You get the press copies, the review copies of the CDs sent through a month or two in advance, which is a very lucky position to be in. There's an element of that to this, isn't there? Of kind of slightly being on the inside, as you say, getting a curated experience. What's very important, presumably, is the brand of Domino Records itself, that people come to you and they'll buy pretty much, as long as it's vaguely in the ballpark of mm-hmm. the genre that they like, they can trust the label to provide them with something that they're going to like listening to. That's a big part of it, presumably.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you know, Domino's been a label since 1993, and now we have, you know, there's three or four other imprints that are part of that as well. And so I think that by that point, you know, people who are fans of the label are fans of, you know, say, maybe they like 60% or 80% or, you know, sort of a wide range of the catalog. And I think those are the people that we're really, really going after.
And you're going digital only. So Domino Drip is, it's this drip feed of, as you say, MP3s or WAVs. Did you kind of discuss the idea of physical? Because a lot of, I mean, I know Rough Trade in the UK, the shops rather than the label, have had the album club, which was, I don't know, an idea that was 5 years old or so by now. And that was about sending LPs and CDs out to people. It was sort of randomly curated, if that survive any form of translation. Sort of randomly curated sort of rag bag of stuff that you get through the post once a month. And you've gone purely digital. Did you kind of focus group this at all to see that that's what people wanted? Is physical simply too expensive to do on a scale like this?
I think that there definitely would be a market for people wanting a physical fan club, but that is really tough to make work. And we've looked at doing that a few times and just felt that it wasn't quite right, and there's so much sort of advanced planning that has to go into that that's different than the sort of day-to-day operations of doing a label and putting out records. And we've just seen other labels do it in the past and it not work all that well. So we thought this is a great way to get started. And if we feel that there is, you know, sort of a market there or interest there in doing physical, then that's something we can look at also. And really the way Domino Drip works is we can say, like, you know, a few months from now, if we want to do a physical release, we can easily do that through this. So this gives us the flexibility to kind of do whatever we want.
So let's go back to the thing. If I subscribe to Domino Drip, I'm a big fan of the Dirty Projectors who are on Domino Records. So I get when their new record comes out in August, whenever it comes out, I get that. And maybe I get something re-released or classic or something that kind of might appeal to me if I like the Dirty Projectors. Is that sort of part of it? Because it's a two-album thing, isn't it, each month?
Yeah, I mean, what happens basically is when you sign up, you immediately get the last three releases in the system. So right now, I think that would be, you know, the Hot Chip record and a Animal Collective single and a Lowered Ends record. And then, yeah, when the Dirty Projectors record comes out on July 9th, you get that on
July 9th is a whole month out. I need to read my press release.
No, that's fine. So, yeah, that's the idea. And we are going to do things where there is some back catalog that we're going to put in there, some classics. And, you know, I mean, some of it will be well-known releases, and then others, you know, there's a really big archive at this point of, you know, pretty great albums that people just, you know, don't really know about. So the idea is we can sort of represent those in a really modern way and kind of and recontextualize those and say, you know, yes, you're a Dirty Projectors fan, but these things might also interest you.
And that's
musically.
Where the curated idea comes in, where you can sort of go, look at this, though, this is great. Do they have to be on Domino, or can they be something, can they be a label that you do a deal with in a certain territory, or are they all sort of very much Domino Records, and that's the offer?
Right now we're doing, it's all Domino Records. And right now we're sort of thinking about, you know, records that we only have in certain countries, how do we do that? But that's sort of a work in process. So right now we're focusing on Domino and then Ribbon Music and Weird World and Double Six, which are sort of the main imprints.
And there's an idea, I guess, also at the heart of this. People would be interested to know about how much money the artist gets from this sort of thing. When you're kind of, to steal a well-known sparkling water line, this is bottled at source, isn't it? You know, you're not kind of having to go through a big kind of, what people see as perhaps an increasingly evil empire like iTunes or something like that. You're kind of, you know, artists make records for you guys and you can give it to people sort of fresh from the farm. Is there an idea of being able to give artists more money, more of the royalties, or give them a better deal because they're going through this system?
Well, how it does work is that, yeah, we do cut out the middleman in this way. So just as, you know, we've run a very sort of significant, you know, label store for, you know, 5 years now, where we sell CDs and vinyl and special editions and all those sorts of things. And, you know, by selling direct, you do make the best margin on those things. And so that applies to both physical and digital. So this is one of those things where it makes sense for us to do, because the most money does come back to the label and back to the artists. And that can be, you know, pretty significant, even if it's on a fairly niche scale. And that's why we do, you know, a direct-to-consumer business, really. I mean, in addition to having access directly to people that are fans of the bands and fans of the label, it's also, you know, a better way and a more really efficient way to bring in money.
Presumably you have a relationship because you've got people's email addresses and you know sort of where they are and how they're enjoying their music, because it's, you can trace everything, I guess, digitally.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have a different relationship with people that buy Domino Records, whatever band they're into. Is that kind of something that helps you kind of focus your efforts and focus your offerings to them, to kind of know where they are, what they're doing, you know, how often they download stuff straight from you guys?
Yeah, it definitely does. And that's been one of the things that's really been enjoyable, is you can comment on a release. And you can, and we have these updates we send out to members and things like that. And you can really get a feel for, you know, if people are liking a record or like questions they have about it. And, you know, there's sort of that direct one-on-one response. And so I think that that's something that myself and Ryan, who at the label, who we've been working on this together, that we really enjoy doing, you know, is having a chance to talk to people directly. And that's something that, you know, you don't get to do in a lot of ways if you're not working in a shop.
We're always told it kind of comes back to live. I mean, I guess this is, you know, being able to put on things, being able to know what the take up for a particular band is very precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Means you can, I mean, I guess this is obviously a job for tour managers and managers of bands themselves, but presumably it helps you to kind of know what scale you can certainly promote new bands in a live venue and in a live way as well, does it? Knowing kind of exactly how many downloads and from where they're coming from.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think that it's sort of interesting. I mean, there's these certain tools that track, you know, radio plays all over the world. And so you can really see interesting things that way. You can say, well, this band had 100 listens in the station in Sweden that we didn't even know about. So obviously they should be going to that, mm-hmm. that place to play shows. And so I think that there's just a lot more tools at our disposal now to really sort of not only segment people, but know where these audiences exist and serve them in that way.
And that was Kurt Lane from Domino Records talking us through Domino Drip. So it's coming part two of this big old musical knees up. We'll have more live music from James Yorkston, and we'll see if it's Hearts and Minds or Bums on Seats that Atlanta's Black Lips want to win over on their upcoming tour of the Middle East. Cool, let's get on with some more of the live stuff from James Yorkston. This is Just As Scared.
This is what I see. It's just you and me. And I won't apologize for didn't ask for it. I let out a little laugh. I've never laughed so much since I was simply undone by your little laugh. And where's the change? change when you need some? Where's the change when you need some? You've really got a hold on me. You've really got a hold on me. And this is never easy. It's just a strange thing I can't get right. And if I were to speak just to tell, I'd be so scared of getting it right. Where's the change when you need some? Where's the change when you need some? You've really got a hold on me. You've really got a hold on me. Now I don't have the answers, I'm just here with you. I'm just as lost as you. I'm just as scared as you. No, I don't have the answers, I'm just here with you. I'm just as lost as you. I just want me and you. And where's the change when you need some? Where's the change when you need some? You've really got a hold on me. You've really got a hold on me.
Thank you.
That was Just As Scared by James Yorkston from his new LP called I Was a Cat from a Book. And to hear about why on earth you'd call a record I Was a Cat from a Book, and to learn other things from a man whose mind is full of interesting things and presumably crammed full of words, I had a chat with the man himself, James Yorkston.
I'm in a great situation because although I don't have huge audiences anywhere or everywhere, I have enough audiences around that I can get away with doing exactly what I want. And what I love doing at the moment is just filling in the words, filling in the rhymes with so many words and having different scans and things going on and playing with sort of double meanings and things. And I love doing that. And it's very much related to Jacques Brel and Linton Kwesi Johnson, people like that, where there's a lot going on. And that really interests me. Not all the songs are like that. I try and strip it back as well. But when I'm stripping it back, it's me trying to strip it back. At the moment, what I'm doing, which comes naturally, is the really heavy dance ones. And I love it. And that's why I do it.
And I mean, that's always been a part of your work, I suppose.
It's coming since
the word. I don't want to call it wordiness because that's always taken in a negative way. But if you know,
loquacious
songwriter.
It is wordy, James, and I don't mind that. You know, it's what it is. You know, not every song has to be "I love you with your eyes so blue" and "dooby dooby doo." I'm not interested in that. And that's,
I hope we have that. We're gonna, that's going to stay in.
That's going to be the next record. Keep what I got. That's not what I do. And I'm lucky that I'm in an incredible situation, that I'm on a great record company where the music goes out around the world. Mm-hmm. And I can do what I like. And that's what interests me. So at the moment, it is wordy, but I love it. And so that's why I do it, you know.
Is it a picture? Do you get a picture in your head and want to write it down, set it to music, or is it almost like the poetry, the kind of play of the words, the way the words sound in their own right before you even put the music on top?
It's definitely both. For example, the song "Catch" was written about. I was over in mainland Europe doing a show, and there was a girl I used to hang around with a long time ago, you know, in my early 20s, and we kind of, you know, drifted apart. And then I saw her working in a bar totally by surprise.
That's a song. That's the most songwriterly thing you could imagine.
But I mean, it's bound to happen. You know, you bump into friends. You know, as you go around the world, you bump into friends. Even if you bump into a friend in London, it's pretty unusual if you're off your beaten track. You know, so and I saw her and I thought, is that her? Shall I go and speak to her? But then there was a barman there, and they appeared to be a couple. So I just thought, ugh, I wouldn't bother. You know, I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll write down a list of all the sort of adventures we had together and leave it there on the table and she'll read it. But then I thought, no, she's going to freak out and think somebody's stalking her. So I didn't do anything in the end. I just, as I was leaving, I just said to our partner, is that such and such? And he said, ah, it is. I said, can you just say that Jamesy from Five says hello? And he kind of looked at me with a wee look in his eye. So he'd obviously heard of me.
Yeah.
And then I just left. But then that night when I got back to the hotel, I pretty much wrote all of Catch. Because just remembering about all those great times, you know, because at that time in our early 20s, she was a girl and she had so much kind of enthusiasm and drive. Well, I hadn't experienced it really in other people, you know. It's like she'd been brought up with this immense confidence to get on with things, you know, and I find it very alluring. So, I mean, that's kind of what it is. I just kind of write about things as they come to mind, you know.
So is memory quite a kind of store for you lyrics
definitely.
And
of
subject matter?
Yeah, but it's quite pastoral. I'm aware of that. Yeah. I kind of romanticize it to a certain extent. And then, of course, you put in fun bits like it says, the greyhounds ran their fences were Brell and Fitzgerald, you know? Yeah. And that's just us, you know, there was a guy who had greyhounds and he'd run up and they would run up and down the path and they were terrifying, you know? But we were pretending to be Jacques Brel and Ella Fitzgerald and singing at them, you know?
That's a visual as well. And there's another lyric that was in there about someone's thin string of black hair on someone's back. There's a lot of vision. Is that important for, especially in the live experience as well, as getting people to painting a picture
of people? I just love doing it, you know. When we woke, I didn't know where I was. Your long thin head and your long thin back. Is that what it says? Something like that. I'd have to go back to the beginning of the song to get it in the right order. It's just something I love doing it. I'm aware that it's perhaps, if you're just a casual listener, it might not be the easiest thing to get into.
And we should address the title of the new record, which is I Was a Cat from a Book, which came out last Monday. It's an unusual title. It's an unusual and charming album title.
Well, I'm glad you like it. All my other albums have had good album titles. There was Moving Up Country, Just Beyond the River, The Year of the Leopard, and When the Harrow's In. I love those titles, and I love sort of things which suggest something, you know, and they've got a bit of weight to them, and they kind of put a nice thought in your mind. I was worried about I Was a Cat from a Book, because I thought it's a bit twee, but then I thought I've got quite a few friends who are musicians and one of them's got an album coming out quite soon, and I just thought, how would I feel if his album was called I Was a Cat from a Book? And I'd be like, that's an amazing title. So I kept it, but it came from my wee girl who's almost 4. In the morning she comes through and she says, what do you dream about, Dada? I have to make something up, so I say, I dreamt I was really hungry and I went downstairs and the whole living room was covered in bananas. I thought, oh, I'll have a banana. But I opened one and lots of starlings flew out. And then, and that sort of stuff, you know.
That's a heavy illusory image for
a 4-year-old. Well, she likes that stuff, you know. Or like, you know what I mean, that sort of thing. Then I said, what you dream about? And she says, I was a cat from a book. Or I is a cat in a book or something like that, you know. And I say, so which cat were you? Were you Mog the Forgetful Cat? And she says, no, I was not Mog the Forgetful Cat. And I say, were you the tiger who came to tea? And she says, no, I was not the tiger who came to tea. Were you the black cat in Master and Margarita? And she says, no, I was not the cat in Master and Margarita. That sort of thing, you know, and you just kind of have to guess until...
Do you ever suspect she might have been the first one, but she was just stringing it out?
Yeah, I think she's working my tired muscles, trying to keep me from going senile. I think that's what it is. She's a very clever girl.
It's the new doing the crossword.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And some of your other titles, I've written them down because I didn't want to forget them.
Yeah,
Moving
yeah.
Up Country, Roaring the Gospel, amazing name for a song. Woozy with Cider. Which sounds like Cider with Rosie. It sounds like a spoonerism of Cider with Rosie.
I honestly, I was aware of Cider with Rosie, obviously.
Yeah.
But I honestly didn't think about Cider with Rosie until much later on. And I thought, help my boob there. And that's obviously where I got Woozy with Cider from.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't.
You didn't realise it was
I wasn't
in your
conscious
mind.
Of it. Conscious of it, no.
And would you have me born with wooden eyes?
That's from a traditional song. I think it's Young Tambling. It's about a guy who's turned into a fairy by the Queen of the Fairies, I think, and then it goes on and on and on, and somebody says, would you have me born with wooden eyes? So I just stole it, really, you know.
It's another great thing.
I just thought it was a great title, you know, so I nabbed it.
Before we go, it'd be nice to ask you where you're going on tour this year so people can come and see you.
So we're looking at shows here and there, but we've got London in September the 24th in Queen Elizabeth Hall.
Cool.
We've got Edinburgh on 21st of September in the Queen's Hall. And then we've got some sort of solo ones dotted here and there.
Where's your sort of heartland to play? Is it up in Fife?
I don't like playing in Fife anymore because I live there. I really like playing in London, to be honest with you. It's good audiences, big audiences. I love playing in Belfast as well. I get put in a lot of churches and I prefer playing like rock and roll venues, you know. And
you so have to convince people.
There's some banter, you know, with the crowd. And I like that. I like the energy. I like feeding off the energy. If you're in a church, you can't swear. You can't put your beer on the altar. You know, you've got to be careful. you know, you've got to talk to the vicar and stuff. Nice guys always. I don't mind playing in churches. It's good fun. And whenever I get asked, I always say, okay. And they're always gorgeous buildings. The dressing rooms are quite often a bit odd, you know.
Like, yeah.
But they're always gorgeous buildings. So it is really nice. But I prefer the sweat of a crowded venue.
And that was James Yorkston and I enjoying a wee chat. And you're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. We're heading to the Middle East via the power of rock and roll after this.
Section D is Monocle 24's show about design. We explore the people and products, the buildings and businesses, the signs and cities that make life better. Each week we bring to life the relationship we have with the things that we live with.
Actually, one of my favourite objects is my motorcycle. I love going by motorcycle. I have this Royal Enfield, a classic English motorcycle from the 50s, but it's exactly as it was in the 50s, and I love the shape, the sound of the engine. I love really how it fits in my life.
We sit down with a cast of characters and chew through the issues at stake in the design world today, across manufacturing, craft, fashion, architecture and graphics.
That's Section D with Hugo MacDonald, premiering every Tuesday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
This is Culture on Monocle 24, and this week we're all about music, friends. The Black Lips are a garage rock and roll band from Atlanta, Georgia, who are infamous for their onstage antics, which include smashing beer bottles and guitars, stripping, and vomiting. In January 2009, they were chased by police out of India for indecent exposure on stage. With that in mind, it seems odd that the band are touring the Middle East in September with shows planned in Syria, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Tunisia, Dubai, and Iraq. It's an unusual trip to the region for any Western band, which would normally be skipped over due to political reasons, social unrest, and war, but seems especially rare for a band with such a reputation. Marcella's caught up with them recently at Oshaga Festival in Montreal to hear what they've got planned.
My name is Joe.
My name is Ian. We play in the Black Lips, Oshaga 2012. What's up? We're going to the Middle East. Where are we going into first, Joe? Jordan?
No, I think we start off in Cyprus, then we move down to Tunisia and Egypt, and then from there we move to Jordan, Dubai, Kurdistan and northern Iraq, and Lebanon.
And Joe, what is the introspect behind this tour?
Well, people have been asking us if we have any type of political objectives here to accomplish, but we don't like to involve politics with our music. That's a very thin wire to walk. We're just going there because we love playing music for new people, and we think maybe a lot of rock and roll bands don't get out to these locations, so it might be nice for them to like just see something they don't normally see. Like, what was that Bambino that this guy had another band before that, and all his like band members got murdered and he managed to escape, but now he's got a new band called Bambino, and it was really exciting to see them from our perspective because, you know, we don't get a lot of like Nigerian rock. And so I'm kind of hoping it'll be a similar experience for the people in the Middle East, you know, they get to see something that might be, you know, an oddity to them or just something that's not usual, ordinary.
In American, Black Lips stands for play rock and roll and have a good time. And that's what we want to do with everybody. So we're going to go over there and just kind of bridge the gap between the East and the West and just have fun. We ain't going to be stupid now. We're going to take all measures, and if it works itself out, it works itself out. If not, we're not going to push anything.
That was Marcellus with the Black Lips. And that's just about all we have time for this week. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. My producer was the Caped Crusader, Katie Bilboa, and the show was edited and mixed by Supergirl, Holly Fisher. Time for one final song this week from James Yorkston's session of tracks. This, from his new album, I Was a Cat from a Book, is Catch. Thanks for tuning in.
For every hour on the road elsewhere, we talked about a future so special. I had no doubts you could become a confidence I'd not seen of you. So rare, a turning of the heads, a turning of the heads. We catch each other out with our tall tales. We catch each other out. The greyhounds ran their fences, Will Burrell and Fitzgerald taunting their charges aside. Relief when we escape their earshot, for I am not a brave man confronted with a snarl and a wiry body. Confronted with a snarl, we catch each other out with our tall tales. We catch each other out. Tied a bootlace and hung a scarf to the accommodating tree that circled the grotto, kept in the magic, kept out the ghosts of the non-believers. We made a cross out of birch and inverted it. I said a silent prayer for you to the wee Mary, chipped plaster virgin. And the turning of the heads, we catch each other out with our tall tales. We catch each other out. And whilst you spoke your obscenities, thus proving a helpless state, I was scared you would whiz or wise in disregard. But you just laughed at this strange country with its strange old gods and ghosts and brain foreign drunk explorers. How strange we should find peace with one another. We catch each other out with our tall tales.